Europe. This is Previously in Europe, a podcast of what's previously in Europe. I'm one of your co-hosts, Hugh, in London. I'm here with my beautiful co-host, Kieran, in Berlin. Say hello, Kieran.
Hello, it's me, Kieran. I'm in Berlin. I'm kind of tired, so I'm not thinking of a joke.
That's probably for the best. The yes, we come to you in troubled times today and yesterday and probably tomorrow and many other days. There are protests happening around the world due to police killings in the US, and then more generally has reignited the need to protest of police brutality, especially towards black and other minority people. Insert the minority that's oppressed in your country here. So we're not going to talk about that, but just to at the top of the show to draw attention to if people have spare money in these times to send that money to bail funds in the US, because thousands and thousands of people are being arrested, and many of whom will have to pay bail and may or may not be able to pay bail. So there are, we've linked the show notes for kind of a crowdfunding page that is distributing kind of semi-evenly money between many bail funds, as opposed to picking one, because I think because the protests started largely in Minnesota, their bail fund has received like a lot of money and are now kind of saying, we don't need as much money, you should send it to other places, which is totally reasonable. And I think it's good that someone has set up a way of kind of semi-automating that, as opposed to you having to like find the one that is next most in need.
Because this is happening, as people probably know, this is happening in like every major city in the US. I think the only thing that I would say for our particular audience is don't fall into the trap that a lot of people, especially in Europe, would make of this kind of stuff doesn't happen here. I mean, the quasi-revolution American Spring thing, that's not happening in Europe. But, although maybe you could compare it to the Chilly Junes, I guess. But, like, police violence, especially towards, like, people of color and minorities, is a thing. Just today, a lot of stuff was coming out about, like, a Dutch law that was passed that's been in the works since, I think, 2016, effectively. Like, the origin story of this law was in 2016, that... basically, the it has to be passed by the Senate, but it probably will be. It removed the automatic investigation aspect of, like, whenever someone died in police custody, it would automatically trigger an investigation into manslaughter. But now what's happened is they've removed that automatic investigation, so now investigations have to be, like, manually, you know, called or whatever. And the most people can be done for is misconduct, which is like a maximum 3-year prison sentence rather than a maximum of a 15-year prison sentence for like manslaughter.
It's a very difficult one, because the this is an example of one of the things where people would complain that like the events in America suck all the oxygen out of every conversation, and the reason is because the scale of the problem is just so much worse that it makes it appear like it's not a problem elsewhere. Whereas you're like, yes, from a numerical standpoint, if you were to skip, like, the scale is obviously not comparable, and in a lot of countries that's due to like a non-militarization of police forces is kind of like one of the primary reasons, as opposed to it being like there being an enormous difference attitudinally or from a legal perspective or things changing for the worse. But then the scale of violence tends to be like, you know, makes the US very distracting, because the police kill, I think I don't remember who to credit this to, but it was the amount that US police fire their weapons in any, mapped onto any country in the world, would make that country immediately seem like a war zone. If you compared it to the current number of firearms being discharged in that country, that ramp up would make it seem like, oh, a civil war has obviously broken out, of course. Which makes it very difficult to kind of, you know...
I think the other thing, though, like, and people who might, like, say... America's problems are worse, and maybe they are in certain respects. I know militarization of police has happened in like France, they made their state of emergency like basically permanent law. Spain has kind of gotten very like militarized police in response to like a kind of quasi drug war type thing of like drugs coming supposedly coming in from Africa, which I'm sure does happen, but probably not to the extent they've responded with. Police in London carrying machine guns has only been a thing since 2012 because of the Olympics. And they said they were going to get rid of it after the Olympics, and then they never did. Some police, not all police.
No, yeah, it's localized to like particular things, but it used to not be a thing at all. I think the core the way round of doing it is it doesn't work both ways round. So basically, looking at the US and saying, "Oh, but that doesn't happen here in Europe," is wrong. But looking at Europe and being like, "It's as bad as the US," is not correct. Also not correct. But it's it's important that both have been talked about. But it's the way round of going like, "Oh, if only the US could be like Europe," is like an absurd position to be taking. which I feel like is the one implies the other, but is not true, as opposed to make people take like computational logic 101 explanation.
In general, though, I would say for people this affects, it doesn't really matter. You can't like point to a country that has it worse and be like, "Aren't you glad you're not there?" It doesn't really matter to their perspective. And I think the last thing would be saying, or the wider point I was trying to make is like, this stuff is happening, but we don't have the time right now to research like every country and what they're doing at the moment and what their key issues are. I spent like a better part of the weekend researching what was happening in Ireland, because that's where I'm from. But like the general thing is that there is probably something. You should look into it and support it if you can, as well as supporting the US stuff.
I think especially if you're not able to go to protests, donating to bail funds is a great alternative, because like, so for instance, in London, while there are large protests happening today, in practice you're not really supposed to be taking public transport, and like because we're still technically on lockdown, like the lockdown hasn't really been lifted, and I know a lot of people would prefer not to travel for like, you know, health risk reasons, etc. Or they have to their job hasn't been furloughed or something. It's good that there are alternatives, and this is a good one. But on a lighter note, we didn't want to talk about this today for a number of reasons. Number one is things could have dramatically changed by tomorrow, so podcast is not the format for that. Instead, we're going to be talking about something potentially positive. We are going to be discussing the proposed additional wealth tax that Podemos is putting forward in Spain as part of our recurring segment. Have you considered wealth taxes in Spain?
Yes, this is this recurring section of the podcast where we ask people, is something Matteo or actually good? The two Matteos in reference here are Matteo Salvini and Matteo Renzi. Matteo Salvini is, if this is bad. Matteo Renzi is, if this is largely ineffectual Blairite bullshit. Or actually good, if this is actually good. So, to lay the land a little bit of what's happening is, so wealth inequality in Spain has, like most other countries, been rising quite a bit. I know that this has gotten to the point now where I think this has changed drastically since post like 2008, 2011, when the financial crisis and euro crisis hit Spain. But now, the wealthiest 1% of the country owns about 25% of the country's wealth, while the poorest 20%, the bottom fifth of the country, owns about 0.1% of the total pile.
Yeah.
So, Podemos has put forward, particularly the person who's kind of like spearheading this, I believe, is Pablo Echenique. Echenique? Pablo's Spanish last name, or possibly French last name. I'd imagine there's some cultural crossover there.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yeah, he's an MP for in the government. He is the spokesperson, the Congress spokesperson for Unidas Podemos, the left-wing party of Spain, who is currently in a coalition minority government. Well, they're in a coalition with PSOE, and I believe a confidence and supply deal with a smattering of regional parties.
Yeah, I'd call them a minority government.
Yeah, they are, because the smattering of regional parties aren't an official coalition. It's confidence and supply, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So, they're putting forward this plan to basically effective tax on wealth generated over $10 billion every year, around 1% of GDP. This can be done without taxing the middle class at all. Would be a progressive scheme starting at 2% for net wealth over 1 million euro and concentrating most of the revenue of that on the 1,000 richest people in Spain. Yeah, as they said, this would be an increase of 1% of GDP every year, which is a pretty big deal for Spain. So that's something that can be then used to, I believe the total number in actual money is 11 billion euro from this alone. This isn't Podemos's or PSOE's like only plan at the moment, but we're talking about this one exactly. So, they're calling it the COVID tax. Net assets over 1 million euro would be taxed 2%. Increasingly progressively, 2.5% above 10 million, 3% over 50 million, and 3.5% for wealth over 100 million. And it's pretty good. It focuses on like a very small minority of people who could afford to pay this in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's basically what's being proposed. It could pass. And one of the things they plan to do with that is like a kind of green investment, to attempt to climb out of their kind of like GDP to debt ratio problem that they have in order to like do more public spending. But
so people may or may not be aware that in theory Spain already has a wealth tax, so this would be in addition to that. So the way this Spanish wealth tax works now, which won't be going away, but I think that the Podemos' argument is the current wealth tax doesn't work. And actually, like, there's a Business Insider article that I'll put in the show notes that was largely talking about the US election, kind of around the arguments last year where Elizabeth Warren was saying that she'd introduced like a small wealth tax, and Bernie Sanders was saying like a slightly larger wealth tax, and all the other candidates saying wealth taxes don't work, that would be impossible to run. And in fact, there's an insider saying that like a lot of countries in Europe used to have wealth taxes, and most of them got rid of them gradually, and then they kind of go through how the remaining ones still work. And they tend to work, like, so the ones that remain are Norway, Spain, Switzerland and Belgium, and effectively most of them are very, very small taxes. So like the Belgian one is 0.15% on securities over 500,000 euros. The Swiss one is quite similar to the Spanish one in that it's a very low percentage on relatively high amounts of money, but it also varies canton to canton in Switzerland. So in practice, if you were wealthy enough, you would just move you'd like become resident in the canton that's most advantageous to you. And that is effectively what Podemos argue has happened with the Spanish one. So the Spanish one now it's over 700,000 euros if you're resident in Spain. It's a different, so it's kind of complicated. I went on a medium dive into various tax advice companies that explain the wealth tax for wealthy people potentially retiring to Spain who are concerned about wealth taxes. And it's basically if you're not resident in Spain, it's only your assets that are in Spain and then your cap is up to 700,000 euro. If you're a resident in Spain, it's your worldwide assets. So this kind of gets around one of the arguments that's often used against wealth taxes, which is, oh, but the wealthy people in our country will just like move their assets abroad and will avoid the wealth tax. And you're like, that's fine if they like physically leave the country and move everything with them. That's not really a conversation. But if they're in any way, if you could argue, if the revenue service can argue they're resident there, they could just tax all of their global assets. There's no reason they have to be like the assets located in the country. So over 700,000 euro, it's at 0.2%, which, you know, is quite low. And then it gets like progressively goes up to 2.5% at 10.5 million euros. But again, this depends on the region, so it differs region to region. So my understanding is that in Madrid, so if you're resident in Madrid, there is no wealth tax in practice.
Yep.
And this is effectively what Potemos was saying. They're like, the wealthiest people who would ever get anything taxed at 2.5% are just resident in the place where they in effect pay none of this tax. So this brings in, the OECD numbers say this brings in about 0.5% of Spanish government's tax revenues, which is not an insignificant amount. And like but of all tax revenues, is much smaller than 1% of GDP. 1% of GDP is much more than that. The other kind of concurrent argument that Podemos is making around this is that Spain has, for Europe, a very low GDP to tax revenue ratio. So they say it's 8% lower than the European average, which is basically arguing that like there's an enormous amount of GDP being, you know, happening in Spain that effectively isn't being taxed, even though you might argue that on the face of it, Spain has a lot of taxes. But like people aren't actually paying it at the rates that they maybe they should be, or that they are in other European countries. So I mean, especially in a time of crisis when Spain needs money, this seems like a reasonable way to bring it in. And if you don't make it regional, don't include regional differences, you won't have like asset dumping.
So like that which is there's two kind of points of that, which is like the 0.5% of the total GDP tax rate, of the tax rate, tax base,
tax,
so like
revenues,
the riches, the wealth tax that's currently in place makes 0.5% of the total tax revenue they're bringing in, which is a bit of a far cry both from the figure of like the wealthiest 1% in Spain, which like hopefully in like this weird kind of quasi, like even a flat tax system would probably hopefully bring in something like, you know, 1% of your tax revenue if you like, if there was an effective flat tax, because it's 1% of the population. But like as previously stated, this 1% owns 25% of the country's wealth. So 0.5% is a very far cry of percentage of autonomy, of tax revenue. The second thing is, this comes back to something that we say on the podcast quite a bit when talking about Spain, but it's been a while, so fuck it, I'll say it again. Spain is a federation in all but name, and like a lot of other federations, the states is a good example. There is like a kind of like tax race to the bottom in a lot of places. Like as far as I know, like something like LA, I think in California has like virtually no property tax. Delaware is like a corporate tax free space within the United States. As similar arrangements exist in Spain. Like one of the controversies about Catalonian like autonomy was, they always wanted to be as autonomous as the Basque Country, and the Basque Country kind of receives their autonomy by terrorism. So with that, they were able to like set their income tax rates, which is something that a lot of other like states don't really have as much control over as like the Basque region. But like those are things that are on the table for the autonomicas in Spain. And yeah, as you were saying, the situation in Madrid means there's like effectively no wealth tax, which is their biggest city, so that's a problem.
It's this seems like a reasonable like a reasonable plan. It seems quite measured. It's not like you know, they could have picked a much higher number and then have it like laughed out of the room. Whereas at this rate, there's been no like dismissal of this from Sanchez's government, yeah. So their coalition partner, the kind of like softer left government.
There's definitely been very absurd like calls in opposition from the official opposition. A lot of like, I was reading an article in the FT about like the anti-lockdown protests that exist within Spain, and they are they're really on that whole like you're turning us into Venezuela thing. With this like modest wealth tax proposal. I think it's a point that a lot of people have made that like no matter like how modest or even-handed your like proposed reforms are, they're still going to call you a communist. But this is quite measured. I mean, this is probably like one criticism of mine is like it could go further. Like 11 billion is handy, but it's not a huge amount when we're talking about like state money. I don't know what the actual total GDP of Spain is. What is like the budget of Spain? Because like countries like this, like it's 1.4 trillion. Like I said, it's not nothing, but you could take it further for sure.
Yeah, I think so. Like, if Spain was announcing a 10 billion euro a year infrastructure spending for green initiatives,
that'd be pretty good.
that's the thing. If like, it's basically, they're arguing that like this is like new income for the central government that won't be diminished anywhere, because this is the kind of like core argument for wealth taxes, which is. This is money that is not being captured by any other taxation in effect. So if you own a lot of property, that property will generate money either via appreciation or via if it's like being rented or developed on. It is making you more money, yet you know that you might have bought it via like exchanging other assets or capital gains, which are often taxed at like a much lower rate than income. So effectively, you're creating this system where income has been taxed at one rate, and then like passive or like non-work related income is being taxed at a different rate. And this will eventually just create a like widening of the gap unless you correct for it. And this is one way of like, you know, sort of correcting for it. This in no way would actually correct for this is the kind of like main argument for this, is that it's incredibly pragmatic. It in no way would like in no way would the people who would have to pay this tax be unable to pay it. So this is the kind of position. The arguments around wealth taxes where I think you often see like funny examples of it, which are like landed gentry in the UK who are like, we had to sell our mountain to pay our inheritance tax bill. It's like those kind of things are obviously ludicrous, but that is the core argument that a lot of people have against wealth taxes is you're like, but it's targeting individuals who like at a tax rate where they might not have income to cover that tax rate. So to do it, they have to liquidate some of their assets. You're like, but they have assets in the millions of euros, and you're arguing they can't afford like to like those assets appreciate at a rate greater than this percentage. So effectively you're making the argument that they should just be allowed to sit on infinite property in Spain in perpetuity, which I think is not a social contract that, you know, anyone in the current Spanish government, well, actually, no, some people in the Spanish government, but a lot of people in the Spanish government now, especially Podemos, don't subscribe to. And doing something like this seems like a very reasonable, like in between of what a lot of the more radical people in Podemos would want, and something that could be palatable to the majority of the PSOE. I think Europe-wide, like, isn't like a unpopular position. A lot of the reasons people don't do it is fear, especially in smaller countries that are in the EU that are we often joke that are kind of like tax haven-y in a way, but are reliant on high net worth individuals who operate.
Yeah,
in
yeah, like a country that might rhyme with Schmarland. Schmuckschenberg, Schmuckstonia, Schmulgaria, kind of. There's been, like, particularly with corporate tax, it's very, like, aggressively obvious who's kind of, like, has that insecurity. But one thing that I do find very interesting about this strategy is, I think we saw in the last, like, 4, 5, possibly even 10 years, we saw a lot of people campaign on, like, the other side of this, where you're campaigning for, like, the big things that you could, you know, like, do. The Green New Deal, Medicare for All in the United States, renationalize the rail in the UK, like, and always these questions of how you would pay for it. The really interesting thing about this is how you would pay for it is kind of, like, is kind of the what they're putting front of this. It's not like, at least from what we've seen from English press, although there is mentions of what they would use this money for, it's not like, here's this big thing we talked about. I mean, I feel like everyone's manifesto is irrelevant in these days, thanks to, like, coronavirus or whatever. But, like, rather than focusing on what we would pay for it first, they're kind of like, here's a way we're going to bring in revenue. Which is interesting that, like, this is the thing they're putting forward first. That is, like, I'm very interested to see how that plan works, because, to be honest, I think the Spanish population would probably be fairly receptive to this. Even people who would support, probably not Ciudadanos, but, like, Vox and PP would probably have that kind of, like, vulgar workerism of just, like, hating their boss and hating the wealthy. They just think they're all George Soros or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's just still, like, like they would be in favor of taxing them more and having 11 billion in the coffers. They'd actually probably just more disagree with Podemos and PSOE about what that money should be used for. So it's an interesting tactic. I hope it works out. Do we have any other, like, criticisms or things to say about this?
I think it is, like, it's an odd, it's, like, a slightly odd choice, in my opinion, to not reform the existing wealth tax. In that, like, for the primary reason that it, I know there'd be, like, I feel like there would be a lot of problems with it. One, you'd have to take away autonomies from the,
from the cities and
regions, which... Yeah, which would be a whole minefield itself.
Smooth sailing history in Spain.
Yeah, I think, like, that would be a core problem with it, but I think this does fall under the problem that a lot of people have with, like, effectively the problem with the Spanish tax code is the same problem that you have in a lot of countries, which is, like, it has been made very complicated. And not in the way that, like, progressive tax bans are not complicated. They've made it complicated in, like, oh, it's different depending on where you live, and, like, the rate changes randomly depending on where you live, and, like, whether or not you're resident changes which assets count, and the calculation becomes more complicated. And it's like that makes it actually very difficult to work out for, like, the average person, because they're not going to spend any reasonable, like, they're not going to sit down and work out whether or not the taxation system is fair or equal in any way. They'll just assume it is or isn't based on, like, a short article they've read. Like, it's not practical. And adding an additional tax, like, I'm for making a more straightforward tax system that is actually fair and promotes equality and redistributes money in a reasonable way. And, like, this does move it closer to doing that, but it does it by, like, adding another lever, which isn't necessarily, like, the way you should go about doing it. If there were no wealth tax, I think this would be a great idea, but the fact that there already is one, adding a second one seems to me that it opens up the easy argument for our wealth tax system is too complicated. We need to simplify it. And then the PP eventually get into power and they're like, we're cutting red tape. Mm. We've gotten rid of one of the wealth taxes. We've combined them into one tax that brings in half the money. And you're like, that's still better than where we started. But actually, by creating this extra thing for them to meddle with, this is... it's not transparent what they've done now by doing that. If you merge the taxes together, for instance,
but it's I wonder. I guess it would depend on what the next step is. It'll probably be a while before there's an election in Spain. Hopefully, I think people are kind of tired of elections within Spain, even if they do support not PSOE or Podemos. But it would depend on what comes next. Like maybe they could scrap the old wealth tax law. It doesn't bring in that much GDP, and just say, and maybe reform this one slightly, or just say this is the wealth tax now, this is the one that exists. It's more in line with how wealthy people in Spain are compared to what they were when presumably the old tax law was made, which was sometime slightly after the 70s, I guess, unless there was some sort of like continuation of a Francoist era law, which, you know, there might have been. But like, yeah, it's an interesting one. But yeah, I do agree that if both exist, it could be a good excuse for like complications. But there's, from what else I've heard about what's happening in Spain, the minimum income thing, which is not a UBI, even though a lot of media says it is, did also seem like it simplified the kind of like dole unemployment benefit aspect of Spanish.
Yes, it basically meant that a proportion of people were now exempt to having to jump through, like if they met a certain means tested criteria, they would then not have to go through the rest of the means tested criteria for the various benefits they would get. They would get one benefit that would cover everything. But
they
increase
it, as far
kind
as I know,
of,
the only thing that like it really measures nowadays is just like number of people in the household. Something like that. There's more. There's 11 categories. I know that much. But, like, there's...
Yeah. Like, I think it overall simplifies it, but it doesn't make it... Like, it's not... Because it's not universal, it doesn't actually simplify the system as a whole.
No. It's not the simplest it could be, but... And I think we're probably seeing this in a lot of countries. Like, I know Germany has basically introduced, like, getting your unemployment via, like, the phone... because of the social distancing laws and stuff like that. I think coronavirus has forced a couple of countries to simplify these systems.
For speed purposes, social distancing,
managing the like sudden influx, if we're talking about like the US and they're like now 30% unemployment. I wonder if that simplifying trend will continue, and under PSOE and Podemos, it might become like less susceptible to critiques of like it's too complicated. Although then again, I'm also of the opinion that no matter how simple they make it, it will probably still be critiqued as being too complicated.
No, for sure. I just, you know, on the face of it, it feels silly to me for there to be, at 700,000 euros of assets, you come under this, depending on where you live, 0.2% rating that may or may not ramp up, but then once you hit a million, suddenly you also have to pay this separate tax that also ramps up at a different rate. So like, you suddenly get into these weird situations where people are like, oh, like if my assets go from like 1.4 million to 1.5 million, I enter this band of this tax and this band of this tax, and my effective tax rate is this, which is slightly worse in some way due
accounting
to
maths.
Weird like ways they ramp up being different. Yeah, and you're like, this is not the straightforward, there are obscenely wealthy people who own most of everything. Yeah. We should tax them more. Seems like a more straightforward argument than like the realities of what this might end up being, which would be like one ding on it. But I think overall, it's like a good idea. It's just the way they're doing it. I would like to point out that our friend Pablo, who's promoting this, is also a physicist. So potentially his love of complex systems that are actually there's no way to be sure of a lot of measurements being true in physics, maybe that's why he's he's putting this forward because he likes the complexity. He wants the Heisenberg principle, where you can't know like what your rate of both taxes at once are. You have to like check one of them, and then as you check that, your other tax changes.
Say my name, Pablo Berg. That was a Breaking Bad reference in the year of our Lord 2020. Anyway, the other slight critique that we can probably bring attention to, the concern that's in the Jacobin article, which I believe is in the notes, is the fact that a part of like the Spain's spending plan, fundraising plan, etc., etc., part of it is out of their hands at the moment. Because of they've broken one of the big cardinal rules, economic cardinal rules of the EU, which is they have gone above 100% of their GDP per debt ratio. They're at 115% currently, or when this article was written. Chances are it's possibly gotten worse due to the current state of the world. And that would probably require like financing from the EU. It definitely will, as a part of one of the various like plans that are in place, like the Macron 500 billion, the Markle, or the like Uchi 750 billion EU Commission plan, whichever one of these things actually goes ahead, and what money. And with that might come some what's the quote, clear commitment of member states to follow sound economic principles and ambitious reform agenda, which is the very similar language to what happened in 2011, which usually means austerity. So who knows where this will go. A part of it is up in the air.
Yeah, that's I think that's it's very true. So on the scale of Mario or actually good, what would you class this as?
I say actually good. Yeah, I think this is the first time we've done a Mario actually good that I've said actually good. It seems simple. I mean, like in both the Guardian and Jacobin article, the Guardian article actually being written by Pablo himself, presumably translated. Maybe not. He seems like a smart person. He might know English. And then the article in Jacobin by Owen Gilmartin. They explain the tax pretty much in full details in like a paragraph, like a relatively short paragraph. The Jacobin one goes into slightly more detail than the one in the Guardian one. Is more about like why this is needed. But like in both of these cases they're able to explain it in one article, which is usually, as far as I'm concerned, a good way of implementing a new tax. Is the one of the alarm bells should always go off is like how ridiculously complicated and long does it take for the people promoting it to explain.
I think that's reasonable. I think it is easy to explain, and training sounds good. I would also say it's actually good for similar reasons. My critiques of it are like quite nitpicky and are reasonably like, it's dire times, and effectively, you know, the way that Podemos frames it is that this is totally in line with what the coalition deal was, which was to reform the tax system to make it more equitable for people, and they say that this does that, which I would agree that it does do that. It does make it more equitable than it currently is, because I mean it's obviously not, you know, working for people the way it is, and it's coming at a time where Spain does need a large influx of money to recover. It's been one of the hardest hit countries by the pandemic. They had a huge number of infections. Their lockdown was like was very severe in terms of like who people not being allowed to go out and what businesses weren't allowed to run. It's also like an economy that is has a lot of tourism money, which might take a long time to return. So the government might need a lot of money to kind of, you know, spend its way out of this problem. And any additional money you could raise, even though they might end up in a favorable borrowing position and or have money coming in from the EU in order to help with the recovery, any additional money they can raise locally will, you know, down the line, make a big difference. Any investments they can make infrastructure-wise. So yeah, I think this is generally a very good thing. I think it's an example of, like, the other countries kind of looking to a European country and going, oh, why can't we do that?
Yeah. I think also the fact that this only basically focuses on, like, the 1,000 richest people in Spain makes this probably fairly popular in within Spain itself. Like I said earlier, this probably doesn't not only have the support of, like, the people who are currently in government, but also, like I said, probably sections of the PPP and Vox even would probably, like, people who vote for those parties would back this. The parties themselves won't, I suspect, but yeah.
No, I think there was also the one of the people in the EU Commission's antitrust office, who is Spanish, wrote an op-ed for one of the Spanish big Spanish papers, basically taking a big shit on the Sanchez government. So it's kind of like this is a sign that the Sanchez government is doing a lot of the right things. Is you have people come out of the woodwork who normally wouldn't make political statements at all, who are like clearly either so indoctrinated or bought into what was the previous status quo, which was like, you know, tax cutting reforms, effectively. Like, the PP was like a quote unquote business friendly while also being incredibly corrupt administration, and it's making a lot of people very, very angry, and their interests are very much not in line with the people, because their arguments effectively are, we can't trust them with the economy, and also they're running a police state. And you're like, I don't know what government you thought was in place before this, but the idea that the Sanchez Podemos, like the PSOE Podemos coalition government, is less trustworthy than the previous several Spanish administrations is, like, objectively hilarious, or that they're in any way, you know, a danger to the fabric of Spanish society in a way that the PP wouldn't be, is again very funny, and I don't know. It's very concerning that you're getting people like that who previously, like, by all measures, like, his job should preclude him from doing that, but he's using it as, like, an EU official says that Sanchez is bad and wrong. It seems like a plus to Sanchez. I think the EU antitrust office does great work in antitrust, and in no way should any officials be making economic judgments on countries. That's objectively funny. But yeah, if you wanna, if you ever think that very, very conservative people in any country are really crazy, you just need to look at the Spanish Parliament now and how angry they are about Sanchez's government. Very angry.
Well, with that, I believe this has been another Previously in Europe. Previously in Europe is brought to you by Hugh O'Brien and Kieran Dold, the lovely voices you just heard. If you like us, you can follow us on social media. We're on all the major places that you can, you know, find most social media things on. I mean, we don't have a TikTok yet, but I mean, it's only a matter of time. My phone has basically just become a TikTok player at this point. The point I'm making is that we have a Facebook group that you can join. We have a Twitter account at Prev in Europe, P-R-E-V in Europe. We have a subreddit. There is a Discord that you can find on our website, previouslyineurope.eu. From there, previouslyineurope.eu, you should be able to find all the information about all of our social media presences. And if you want to support the show, there is two ways you can do that. The first is to find us on Apple Podcasts, which is what iTunes is called now. You can also open iTunes on the desktop if you have a MacBook. It's still called iTunes on that. It's very confusing. And leave us a 4 or 5 star review with some text telling people how good the show is. That helps the whole Apple Podcasts algorithm gods realize that we are a pleasing podcast and helps more people find the show. And if you've done that already, you can also tell your friends. And if you've done that, you can donate to us on Patreon, patreon.com/previouslyinEurope. If you donate over $3 per month, you can get your name read out on the podcast, like these cool cats: Dermot Burke, Drews Arian, Echo2100, Justin Paul Sammons, Michael Hall, Noosh Alexander, Niall McLaughlin, Patrick Seba, Petra V, Smiro, and Sven Vest. So if you want to be like those cool cats, donate. And also, if you don't want to donate this month, I understand, but to donate to the AtBlue link that we put in the description and help people in America get out of jail for some bullshit they probably didn't do. Thanks for listening.